Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. For Imperial and Mexicali Valley, we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874.
And make sure not to miss us on the KXL website radio broadcast, because you can download any one of our shows into either a short 5-minute summary or the whole entire show, which means we're leaving footprints now, so we're behaving.
Yes, and it's at kxlradio.com, and we have podcasts there.
Yeah, that's indeed duty.
With your hosts, Maria and Scott.
Okay, so let's jump into this thing. We got Juan Jose Flores here, and he is a substance abuse counselor who is also in... it's over. You're done.
Yeah.
When do you get your master's degree?
November.
In counseling? Is that what it is, or what's it called?
Master's in counseling.
Oh, okay.
And marriage and family therapy. So
how'd that feel?
Yeah, it feels like a big load is lifted off.
You can just now and get a better gig somewhere else, or?
I like what I do. But yeah, it's definitely a big load off and focus on something different now.
So how long have you been a substance abuse counselor?
A substance abuse counselor in and of itself, I believe it's been 2004, 2005, around there. So when I came on board.
So 4 or 5 years. Have you seen it all?
Not really.
The kids, the grown-ups.
There's still more.
I've got an opportunity to work with diverse populations and just been around. So I've gotten a wealth of experience when it comes to work but I haven't definitely seen it all. You know, there's always something new that comes along with our clients.
What does it mean to be a substance abuse counselor for our listeners?
Well, really, it's more of a, what I do is facilitate groups, group therapy, and I don't really agree with the whole counselor title, and I let people know that because I don't believe I'm privileged enough to give people advice on anything, you know, as far as the whole counseling and routes.
Like, literally counsel.
Yeah, counsel. I don't do a lot of that. I don't think I ever do any of that. But more of facilitation, a guide, you know, provide resources. And so that's what it means to me as far as what I do at my work site.
Because when you said substance abuse counselor, we figured you sat in a room full of abusive substances and counseled.
Well, no, the reason why I asked that question, because I there's probably a lot of listeners out there that have family members or them themselves or our parents too, of teenagers who are listening to the radio show, and what does it mean to when my child, my loved one, my spouse, or myself, you know, they could say, we go into treatment, into alcohol treatment, what is it going to involve?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And they do come sometimes, you know, looking for that counseling. But it's just from the get-go, letting them know what your role is and what we're there for to provide. Because sometimes there's that tendency for responsibility of treatment to be placed on the counselor, and that's kind of starting off on the wrong foot already. So I make sure I leave my role clear from the beginning, and that helps. It helps a lot.
So today we're going to talk about one of the ways that one of the models, I suppose, that people can use to bring about change in their lives. So, want to give us a quick summary?
Well, we're going to talk about the stages of change, and that's something we implement at Behavioral Health and especially in substance abuse treatment, mainly because it's a good way of monitoring where people are at as far as their recovery, how serious they're taking it, what interventions to use. You know, that would be effective, because you don't want to deal with some intervention with somebody who's not in the proper stage for it or prepared for it. And just a basic summary is it starts off with pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, and maintenance. And that's what the show's going to be about today.
So anybody who's interested in changing anything, I suppose.
Anything, actually.
Yeah, this applies to pretty much anything. And for any bad habit that we have, you know, eating habit, you know, sleeping habit.
Could I change my good habits?
You could even change that.
Hopefully not.
Well, so let's jump right in. 337-8874 is the phone number if you have questions for Juan today. He's again, we got people here that know their stuff about this thing, so if you have any curiosity or anything, 337-8874. Let's just jump right in. So, first one you mentioned was, did we start at the beginning, I guess?
Sure.
Okay.
So, pre-contemplation. Well, pretty much what it is just, I don't want to use the word denial, because we talked about that yesterday, and it doesn't apply to all cases where this stage is characterized by denial. A lot of times it's just plain ignorance on the problem, you know, that the problem even exists. So a lot of times it's just not knowing, you know, to what extent this is negatively affecting my life. You know, this negative behavior, whether it's bad eating habits, alcohol use or abuse, or just anything else.
How could they, well, for a client coming in, how could they not know that they have a problem if it's bad eating habits that, you know what, they're overweight, you know, or that, you know, they're having some health issues, or with their symptoms of abuse, let's say that they just lost their home and their job, but they don't see that they have a problem. How could that be?
Well, I think a lot of times it's the, it's not necessarily they don't see it. It's just mainly, I think, that they're referred, and it's not really willingly, you know. A lot of times they're referred from the court system. And so when somebody says, I don't know about you, but somebody sends me to do something against my will, I'm pretty reluctant, or there's going to be resistance. That's one thing I do see a lot is resistance. I don't necessarily see total reluctance to not take on treatment or participate in treatment. So that I do see a lot. As far as them totally being oblivious to the problem, I don't really see that, especially when they're already in the intake. They've already been calling to receive services. You know, they know something's up, something's not right, but that they're there willingly, maybe not. You know, and a lot of times too, that denial, you know, that it's affecting them to that great of an extent. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't feel they need to be there.
So typically people who walk in your door, it almost sounds like you're saying that people who actually walk in the door, even though they were sent by somebody else, at least a part of them is starting to think about this, even if they don't really want to, or just a little, barely, hardly want to.
Does that also apply for those that been, you know, they were sent to you for treatment for alcohol and drug because their kids were taken away?
Yeah.
They have?
And I think with a participant who comes from that
CPS?
Yeah, from the CPS side of it.
Child Protective
Services. I think definitely they're already coming in, if not in the contemplation stage, you know, I've seen some that come in the preparation stage already, ready to kind of just take on whatever is necessary.
So pre-contemplation, though, is really no awareness at all of any need to change anything, right? It's not on your radar.
Yeah, it's not really on the radar. It could have been that they, for example, we talked about eating habits. You know, it could have been that somebody already has tried many different weight loss methods, you know, diet.
Buying bigger clothes. That's
yeah. So finally it comes to that, you know, just after so many failed attempts, they just pretty much give up on it. It's not necessarily that they're denying. Well, could be kind of like denial, but just basically they're just, you know what? Well, like you said, I'll buy bigger clothes, or I'll try something different. I'll try in substance abuse, for example. You know, it'll be I'll substitute with something different. You know?
Or I'll start only using only on the weekend.
Yeah,
it won't affect
the
my work.
The justification, yeah.
But I don't have a problem. See, that's almost like a hint that you have a problem. If you begin to try and control it, you're almost contemplative at that point, because if you didn't think it was a problem, you wouldn't define it only weekends or something. I mean, when you begin to start control something, you think about it.
But, you know, just think about it. I mean, somebody that drinks, you know, it drinks and it's affecting their job.
Yeah.
Well, hey, if I drink at least in the weekends, it's not going to affect my
job. Right, right. So they already know they have a problem.
Well, so to some extent.
But I can control it.
Well, it's the first attempt. See if that works.
Yeah. Well, just one thing to clarify about the pre-contemplation stage. You know, it's not always total, like, just
not knowing.
Not knowing is it's just basically the failed attempts that have discouraged a person from wanting to make a change. You know, and I know initially you might say, you know,
they've actually given up. So
they've given up just pretty much. So they realize, you know, for them that's not going to be back to pre-contemplation.
Trying to solve it,
justifying it. You know, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. You know, so justification is one of the main things that characterizes somebody in pre-contemplation. You know, there's a lot of justification. So initially working with somebody in the pre-contemplation stage is breaking through that. You know, breaking through that, those justifications.
What kind of stuff do you use to break through that?
Well, you know what? One of the things that comes in very handy is right now we're utilizing the smart recovery model for a adult ODF and just alcohol and drug in general. We're using smart recovery and it touches on 4 points. And the first point, which is enhancing motivation, it has a lot of good tools as far as education. Just the main goal, I think, with somebody in the pre-contemplation stage would be to just plant that seed of curiosity for, mm-hmm. you know, what if, you know, or what could be, you know, potentially a problem, you know, could this be really affecting me, you know, that kind of thing. It's just kind of stirring up the curiosity, really. And again, it's just utilizing a lot of educational tools. The groups, the support groups really help a lot because as other participants are sharing their stories, they're getting feedback on, you know, what this could potentially be me in the future, or is already me. You know, I've been through that. This was just being able to relate to somebody else.
So someone coming in and saying, I used to be like this, and I was using all the time, and I thought it was okay, but I was getting in trouble, and I still thought it was okay, and I came here, and it took a little while, but I suddenly kind of realized it and actually started to turn my life around. Somebody else hearing that who's still in the beginning parts of their stuff.
Yeah, it helps to move them forward.
Yeah,
it really helps. So that's with somebody in the pre-contemplation stage, those tools come in handy.
So the group process. Mm-hmm.
The group process itself and just how you utilize it as far as educating the client in that stage. So, and as far as the length of time any participant could be at any point in time in the stages, it varies a lot.
So there's not like a time limit.
There's not a time limit, really. It's just, it varies on a lot of factors. One of the main ones that I've seen that is their pretty much their social and their home,
mm-hmm.
their home environments. You know, if their environments at home and their social life aren't conducive to treatment or recovery, then it just kind of slows the process down a bit.
So they have to include that, I suppose, maybe in their change considerations.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like, mm-hmm. if I think, well, it's my drug problem that I need to work on,
yeah.
but it's the chaos in the home or the mm-hmm. danger or the drug dealer living upstairs or whatever,
yeah.
that, you know, at some point you have to go, wait a minute, maybe that's...
Maybe sometimes after listening to their story, you can actually understand, you know. Oh, no, it's no mm-hmm. wonder they use, it's no wonder they're into it. It's not a justification for them.
Right.
But it's just really, you get a really good picture as to what's keeping them
yeah, there's
engaging
exactly.
in that. You know, it's always
context.
Yeah.
It's always context.
Yeah.
That's true.
So pre-contemplation could be multiple failed attempts and you've just given up hope.
Yeah.
Or it could be something like, I don't know, like cell phones. Cell phones transmit electromagnetic radiation.
Yeah.
And I'm making cell phone calls all the time now because it's just easier than giving people two numbers. Mm-hmm. And so... But I'm not thinking.
I have no idea, Scott.
I'm not thinking that I have a problem with electromagnetic radiation going into my brain, right? At all right now. I mean, I'm not thinking that.
You're pre-contemplation.
But if
I have no idea, but I think it sounds good.
So let's say in 10 years or so, we start seeing the beginnings of the cases of potential harm come out. I'm probably going to like move right into contemplation and say, whoa.
Yeah,
this stuff is bad for you, and I've been doing it a lot. And
mm-hmm.
time to get a hands-free device or something that, that you can put in your ear that gives you a lot less radiation than holding the phone up to it.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So, yeah, so actually, and see, the education definitely helps out a lot. So, facts are really important, you know, facts, definitely facts, because it's not until we see it either posted somewhere or in some important journal or something.
So, this can actually work for people that have been using drugs or alcohol for many years.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
It's not somebody that just, you know what, got caught.
No, it could work for anybody in any stage of life, I think. It's just a matter of how it's applied.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, well, in the education side of it, you know, getting something that relates to their, wherever they're at, you know, and 'cause, again, we have diverse populations, so we deal with different age groups, different cultures, and so, you got to get pretty creative sometimes with these.
You know, it occurs to me, there must be some benefits to using drugs, because if you think about all the bad things that happen to people who have problems bad enough to go into treatment in particular, you know, like losing your kids, going to jail, mm-hmm. losing your job, all that, you know, losing your husband or wife or whatever, you think about those problems, it's just like drop dead to somebody who's never been there, I suppose, and you think, man, well, it's like, hello, first indicator of problem, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
But there must be a reason people keep going. To that extreme consequence before
you don't know, like you said, until you listen to the story, you'll find out. You know, maybe they've been exposed to trauma, they were sexually abused, domestic violence. Mm-hmm.
And just that initial gratification, you know, that instant gratification that drugs bring, is enough of a reinforcer to keep them mm-hmm. actively using. Even though on a long-term basis, it probably is a very expensive habit. Initially, you know, getting a fix for $20, $10, $5, and getting pretty much a change in the state of mind is reinforcement enough, I think, than therapy that can take, you know, it's a process, and it could take up to years or it could take months, you know, before they see any results. So just that initial gratification they get from drugs, I think, is enough to keep them going.
You said, I think you hit it when you said, it changes their state of mind. So in some way, people who get to that place must have something that they want to change in their state of mind.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, so their state of mind wasn't really good to begin with.
Yeah, well, like Maria said, you know, exposure to a lot of traumas or exposure to just different things in their lives. Who knows? You know, so it's a lot of things that are bottled up inside and they're going to be manifested sooner or later, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is some way to put it off or something, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, but I think that's one of the main points to touch on is educating them on that sooner or later these problems have to be dealt with and unfortunately for them mm-hmm. it's going to be, it requires, you know, a certain level of clarity mm-hmm. for them to do that. So it means staying off of it for the initial period of.
So how do you have like a balance in your counseling center, and you put like a little weight on it for the drugs on one side,
mm-hmm.
and you put like a little weight on it for the family, and a little weight on it for the job, and a little weight on it for police, and a little bit weight on it for that, and see which side of the scale wins?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, actually,
yeah.
That's a good way of putting it. It's just seeing where they're at.
The pros and cons,
and also too, looking at any red flags, looking at the hierarchy of needs. That really comes in. And what I've done, you know, knowing about the hierarchy of needs actually really helps, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and just seeing where they're at as far as fulfilling those needs. If their main focus should be on their physical needs, you know, their safety, you know, if the loving belonging, you know, there's different stages.
Is that typical for people that come into treatment for you?
Typical as far as what?
Yeah, like most people at that beginning stage of treatment need to mm-hmm. begin to take care of themselves on those very basic levels.
No. Okay. Actually, when they come in, sometimes they've neglected their health
mm-hmm.
a great deal. And so that sometimes becomes an initial goal in treatment is just to get stabilized health-wise.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of things to look at. But definitely somebody in the pre-contemplation stage, education, and just feeding them information.
Okay. So that's the first stage.
Perfect. 337-8874 is the phone number. We're talking to Juan Flores, Substance Abuse Counselor for Behavioral Health. We're going to take a top of the hour break. We'll be right back with more show. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It, your wellness radio. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874, and we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7.
And if you like the shows or are interested in the shows, you can also catch the podcasts over at KXO's website. So,
KXOradio.com.
You know what you do? You just, if you're in Firefox, you just type KXO into the browser, and the browser will figure it out all for you.
Oh,
you don't
cool.
have to go through Google anymore. Okay. Love Firefox.
Firefox. Okay.
We're here today with Juan Jose Flores. He's a substance abuse counselor, been doing it 4 or 5 years. He just, like yesterday, completed his work for his master's degree, so he will be getting the golden cloth or something.
Something like that.
Putting it up on his wall. Demanding additional respect. And we're talking about the stages of change. Now, we talked about pre-contemplation, and I guess that's really important to start because I guess when you're thinking about change, the part where you're not thinking about change is really where it all begins.
So, what's the next step?
Well, next step, once again, the curiosity has been planted and the person is not so much invested in treatment yet, but just pretty much, I guess you could call it, you know, willingness to just sit through the group or sit through whatever somebody's going to tell them. Then it's the contemplation stage now. And contemplation is just basically entertaining the idea of change, you know, with anything. In this case, what we do is, in substance abuse, is just entertaining the possibility that, again, this behavior could be a danger, could be a risk, could put them just in a position where they just keep getting negative consequences after not negative consequence. And
so in treatment, these people might still be using on a regular basis, but they've actually begun to turn the corner because they're thinking about maybe this is a problem.
Yeah, definitely. In the contemplation stage, there's a lot of mixed feelings, and I guess a better way to put it is just conflicting thoughts, just what you're presenting them might be conflicting with their system of beliefs, you know, their own belief system and their own ideas about what this meant in their life. You know, here you are telling them, you know, this potentially can either lead to your death, or, you know, it's not going to work with you getting your kids back. It's not going to help in you getting out of these legal binds, and they were brought up different, you know, and to them it meant something different. So it's like a lot of conflicting ideas and thoughts and emotions there. So being in the contemplation stage isn't necessarily always a good thing because, again, like you pointed out, you know, there's still the factor that they keep using, and if not dealt with appropriately, you know, there's that chance that they might just, you know, get back in the hole they were in and just shut themselves out.
So it's just kind of like somebody who put on like 5 to 10 pounds, and they're looking at themselves going, maybe I should go on a diet, and then they go eat some donuts. But they're thinking about it.
Definitely.
Okay, well, how do you, in treatment, what do you do to crash through that? What do you do to work through that stage?
Well, again, the groups really, really help, the support groups, and mainly because of other people's life experiences. So, again, our role is just facilitate the conversations, facilitate the themes that are being talked about, get creative with kind of stirring up, you know, something in the group that gets them going, because you have people at different stages. So our role as facilitators is get creative in utilizing the tools we have. You know, there's some participants that are already in advanced stages, and it's utilizing what they have right now to move the other participants forward.
Yeah.
So that comes in really handy. Again, in the 4-point system with the SMART recovery, coping with urges, you know, there's point number 2 on there. That has a lot of good tools, a lot of good activities.
Maybe some motivation still, huh?
Yeah, still motivation.
Yeah, maybe I should, but I don't know.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's true. So you're going to be working on enhancing their motivation, and 2, helping them deal with coping with urges and managing that, because they might be wanting to stay clean. Again, they might not be using, at that point, they might not be using as regularly, but Maria, you pointed out, earlier when we were talking that, you know, using on the weekends kind of thing. Well, they might resort to that. And so, but
hey,
maybe this will work. Yeah, but they're still dealing with the urges throughout the week, thinking, you know, that the weekends come in and, you know.
Now, if it's illegal drugs and they have legal problems or CPS problems, the whole weekend thing's probably going to fly, huh?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, they might not be congruent with that plan.
337-8874 is the phone number. Juan Jose Flores, Substance Abuse Counselor for Behavioral Health Services, is the guest. So, at some point, they're thinking in the stage of change thing. They're thinking, they're contemplating, they're in contemplation stage, and at some point, say, okay, yeah, this is good. I'm going to go with it. What happens next?
What's that stage?
Well, that would be the preparation stage. So once you've stirred up the curiosity, you know, once they start contemplating the idea of change,
mm-hmm.
and they get into actually looking into mm-hmm. into what are the things they could do to change that behavior. In other words, if it's eating habits, you know,
start
looking up, going to doctors, getting checkups, nutritionists.
Stop eating fast food.
Well, wait. I actually, because this is a true life story, I'm sorry. But okay, so when I've got that 10 pounds, I'm looking at it and going, man, okay, it's time. One thing that I feel is like, stop buying donuts, you know. So that's like a preparation for me. It's like you begin to make your environment safer almost.
Well, you would already
done.
Okay.
You would already be kind of jumping the gun a little as far as the stages. You'd be in the action stage. You already started doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Preparation stage is just building up resources, you know, making mm-hmm. a plan. Really, preparation is just kind of getting the...
So I plan not to buy any more donuts.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. how you're going to do it, you know, how much, if you're going to, what are you going to do with that
so
money?
So now it's,
yeah.
So now right now for those people that, okay, let's mm-hmm. move into just the weekends. So when they're in the preparation, they're like, okay, now I'm going to stop using on the weekends.
Or maybe not use as heavily.
Or
how am I going to do that?
How am I going to do it?
So what kind in treatment, what kind, in substance abuse treatment, what kind of stuff do people have to deal with in preparation?
Well, number one, home, social factors, those have really got to be looked at in that stage.
So you need,
well, just in any stage, but I think mainly in the preparation stage.
If it's not safe, it ain't going to work.
Exactly, you know.
So if you have
a
spouse,
this great plan,
yeah.
and then...
and really good intentions.
And really good intentions, but if the conditions aren't right at home or in our social environments, then the chances for that plan to succeed aren't going to be as great.
So that means that for somebody that lives in an area that is, there's a lot of things that provoke the urges,
yes.
you know, living right next door, like you, or upstairs, living downstairs from a drug dealer or, you know, from their boyfriend that uses drugs is preparing, setting up things to move out of that area, out of that environment.
So that would definitely be included in the plan, mm-hmm. you know, it's, okay, yeah, here's what I want, but how am I going to achieve it? What's going to be included? And it's just been keeping it,
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's Friday, and I made that big decision, and I come home Friday, and I got that decision all down, and I'm not going to use any more drugs, and all of a sudden, it's like, yo, dog, what's up? And it's gone, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially in those initial phases, you know, that like you said, there might be really good intentions, but just the preparation isn't solid.
Do they have to prepare for withdrawal? Is that part of this?
Yeah.
Sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes. That too. Because actually, depending on the substance, you know, and their drug of choice might be heroin. It might be, you know, it might be they're coming in a treatment with already some attempts and might be even on methadone. You know, that's a very scary drug to withdraw from. So depending on their substance, also to alcohol, you know, that's
they need a doctor.
Yeah, so that's based on whatever drug they're using, actually I think medical intervention is going to be needed first before anything else. So again, they might have the greatest intentions to stop, and maybe they even try stopping before, but
Fear of withdrawals
is a definite reality.
Well,
and
do these people all have access to healthcare? I mean, I'm thinking, you know,
no.
a 24-year-old living
mm-hmm.
in his mom's house
remember
without
Scott,
insurance.
Yeah,
yesterday in the newspaper,
remember
in the newspaper yesterday, it came out that Imperial County has the highest, I mean, well, we're the number one in the country regarding poverty levels.
Nice. We win. Ha.
Exactly. We have a lot more people
are they gonna send us
in poverty.
Big cash prize? That would make sense, wouldn't it? Probably.
We might get more stimulus money out of it.
Cure problems.
But yeah, here in the Valley has. So no, a lot of the people that are coming into.
Oh, that's why they're. I mean, again, there's no justification, but that's too why we have a high rate of.
So, but somebody who's, let's say, on heroin, for example, and would ideally be seeing a doctor and go to the doctor and say, you know, okay, I have been using, and here's where I'm at, and I'm ready.
Or if they have insurance, they can just go to a private, you know,
clinic
out there in the San Diego and get the, what is it called, Malibu, somewhere in Malibu.
With the massage center and the gurus and the macrobiotic diet. But somebody typical Imperial Valley person that's using heroin isn't going to, you know, maybe have medical insurance.
No, maybe not.
And so they're not going to be able to go to a doctor and say,
the most
you know,
they could get with CMSP, which is the county medical, is a 21-day detox, you know. But if you have somebody who has a 20, 30-year history of heroin use.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be hard.
Yeah, it's going to be hard. What we have dealt with as far as we try to make the best out of every situation, so it's utilizing both our resources and the community resources. So if they do a 21-day detox, it just being follow that up with like intensive outpatient and or just any other type of medical help that the person could get. I mean, it's hard. Definitely poverty is something to look at and their financial status.
So if we do a good job preparing, it's over, right? It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next phase?
Okay, well, preparation and the action phase, you know. That's where you get into...
But that's
okay,
easy
not,
because you already
not
buying
the donor.
You already tried it in your head. You did your contemplation. Or so now it's smooth sailing?
Well, not really. Not yet.
I don't think
there's ever going to be the whole... or it will take a long time to get to that point. But the action phase really is just, especially initially, it's just trial and error, you know. Here's my plan. Here's my intentions. However, there's no guarantee that it's going to work out like I want it to. So it's also to preparing them for potential failure.
So how
do you deal with failure? How do you deal with not being able to get this plan accomplished?
What kind of stuff pops up that knocks people off the tracks?
Well, my dad pointed out, you know, there's relationship issues, you know. There's home issues. There's employment issues.
Yeah, but you
know,
just quit drugs. Now everything's okay, right? I mean, all that stuff just goes away, doesn't it?
No, now reality sets
in. No, actually, now it's worse because...
Reality
sets in. And so, and again, along with reality comes all these hidden emotions and feelings. And so, preparation still at play. It's just, now they're just actively engaging in their plan, you know. Again, like you said, not buying donuts. Not going to the friend's house, you know, abstaining from the use and trying to find something different, you know.
Safely managing withdrawal, even.
You know, what I've heard, and you've heard it at the perinatal with women who have children, is that we're not taken away, we're using drugs, the kids were not taken away by CPA, they still had them, they just got, you know, to probation or somehow, but they still had the kids before they would be high, and the kids would be asking for food, you know, they needed time, and the moms would just get high and slip into a, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I could do that with TV. I don't need.
And but now they're starting to stay clean, and the kids are, you know, Mom, I'm hungry. Mom, help me with
chargers
are
on.
Homework.
Deal with it.
Mom, you know, I want this. Mom, I want that, and I only have one, and that's a lot for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of stress. So basically, we're taking them from their comfort zone and placing them somewhere where they're going to experience possibly a lot of discomfort and a lot of anxiety.
And possibly relapse, I guess is what
you're saying. And there's always going to be that thing. Well, that's when the...
People relapse.
Yeah, that's when the risk for relapse is really high.
But you don't have to relapse, right? I mean, that's not...
You don't have to. I mean...
You don't really want to.
Again, it's just whatever's included in the plan. And if you include in the plan, again, not only...
If you have these searches, who do you call? What do you do?
Yeah, not only with our groups at Behavioral Health, but we encourage... Because CBT and Smart Recovery are like a great complement for other support systems. You know, there's AANA, there's different support systems out there in the community, and this is really whatever works for the person.
we just go with that. Mm-hmm. We go with that and
but the difference that we want to make clear is between SMART recovery and
the 12 steps.
Is that in 12 steps, mm-hmm. people don't have the power. They're powerless.
Yes.
And in CBT, yes, you do have the power to make that change.
Oh, empowerment, definitely.
Empowerment.
Definitely.
So.
But again, it's we're not with them 24-7. Mm-hmm. We're not
they
with
need
them.
To have
we're
some
not with
support.
Them on the weekends. So really, if this plan is to be successful in long term, which mm-hmm. is another one of the points in SMART recovery, is to make this a long lasting, satisfying experience, is to mold the plan to fit their needs and to fit mm-hmm. their life. Because we have a lot of people coming from different ends of recovery and different belief systems, and so it's just adapting to that. But what I see in my experience in utilizing SMART recovery and utilizing CBT is that it's a great complement too. It works great with mm-hmm. other support systems. So that threat that they might experience with, oh well, I don't want to leave this other support system because it's been working for me. I don't see that a lot in our participants in our program. So along with that, we encourage just pretty much anything that they're doing out there. So definitely, again, who do I call? Mm-hmm. You know, who do I talk to? What do I do when I experience when I'm at like a 10 in the urges? You know, that kind of thing. That comes in really handy to include in the plan. See, and that's our responsibility, I think.
So part of preparation is already understanding and having urge coping strategies.
Yes, definitely. Which is point number two. You know, coping with urges. That's mm-hmm. that's a big focus on there. So I think number one and number two are going to be utilized throughout definitely the whole stages of change, because it's always you're always trying to enhance mm-hmm. motivation, you're always trying to help the individual cope with urges or just anxiety in general. You know, anxiety could be can induce to a potential relapse. Mm-hmm. You know, if not dealt with appropriately. And we have a lot of what we've been well, not just recently, but just what I've seen now that we have our MHSA services on board is we're seeing great results with participants who are getting kind of like the wraparound approach, where they're receiving treatment for mm-hmm. underlying anxiety issues or like you said, traumas,
mm-hmm.
Along with the support groups. You know, mm-hmm. so that helps to see that initially and include that in the plan, and really makes their episode a lot more successful.
Mm-hmm. From your sense as a master's level counselor now, Is underlying mental health issues common in people with substance abuse problems?
I think it is definitely it's a
lot of times that's why a lot of people start using
self medication is a factor. I mean, if you put on a balance, those that use just to use and those that use to cope with something, definitely the ones that are using to cope with something will outweigh the ones that are just using for mm-hmm. fun, you know.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are using to
at
cope.
At least when we're dealing with participants that are already receiving treatment with us.
So a lot of people are just using to cope in some respects, and and it may help them cope, but the cost of the coping method is too high because you get jail, you get in trouble, you get kids taken away, lose your job, lose your family, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a very functional coping way.
Yeah, definitely not. And so in the action stage, that's something that needs to be looked at a lot is okay, this might not work. This is what you want, but mm-hmm. you know what? Let's have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, because if we don't prepare participants for that plan not to work, then the only other coping skill they have is the use.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more you include in their plan as far as options, I think is mm-hmm. better.
So if you get through action, you make it where?
Well, you get into maintenance stage. And maintenance stage doesn't mean keeping that same exact plan. It actually just means modifying the plan now to just, you know, to getting good at modifying the plan yourself, you know, throughout your life.
I've got some space for my problem, and I'm kind of getting comfortable with the change.
Yeah.
I just want to maybe be careful to a certain extent or have a life that doesn't lead back to that path.
Now you do other activities that are healthy, you know, exercise, walking in the park, playing with your kids,
spending time.
No, eating healthy,
And not dropping.
Having new friends, moving to Hina, living in a place where there's not a lot of drugs around.
And definitely not dropping the support systems that are working. You know, a lot of times I see participants coming into our program, as if, for example, completion, right, of the first treatment objectives, which is the legal matters or getting their kids back and things like that. What we're seeing now is we're trying to get participants more engaged into continuing in treatment. Once completion sets in for those first objectives, because treatment is a long term process. So they might complete their first objectives, but there's always something to work on. For example, I have some participants right now working on bettering or improving their relationships, you know, with their partners, with their kids. Getting their kids back now is added pressure. So, you know, how do you deal with that kind of thing? And so their treatment focus just shifts, it changes. And that's part of the maintenance stage is them understanding, you know what, my life, as my life changes, so will my coping strategies, you know, and how creative they are to doing that, I think has a lot to do with what we provide as an agency and how we make, just what you were saying, you know, to create a kind of like a safe haven at our program or just in any support system in general, so they could do that, they could practice that. And I think to promote long-term care as opposed to completion, here you're done. Mm-hmm. I think it's
go back to your same drug infested neighborhood.
Yeah.
Go back to your same social problems. Go back to your lack of education and lack of job. Go back to your you know, whatever else is there.
See, there you go. See, dealing with obtaining a job, continuing education. I have some participants right now that have completed their Prop 36 requirements, but yet lacking job. Lacking that support system at home. So for them, cutting the system out, even something like our support groups, at one point they saw as mandated, you know, would kind of be a bad thing at that point, you know. So I try as much as possible to encourage people to continue.
So at some point, regardless of who sent you, at some point you take this on as your own project.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing a lot of receptiveness to this and as far as shifting their focus now. And also, too, helps them feel accomplished, you know, that, okay, now I completed that, and now I can make this about me. You know, it's not about the court system or CPS on my back. Now I can make this about myself and get something positive from this.
Yeah.
So maintenance stage, definitely always a risk for relapse, and it's looking at that. It's just that now the risk for relapse It gets lower because you know, now they have a wide variety of coping skills.
Yeah, and supports.
And support systems and things they could do. The use is always going to be an option. It's going to be in the background. So they it's also to being rational and realistic. With
so you might get an urge popping up
again,
even in maintenance.
Yeah, but at least you have now your support. You know, in maintenance, you know.
So you've already made a decision that's not good for you. You've already gotten away from the urges mostly, and you've got a life that's now rewarding and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not much, even if you get an urge, it's like, so what?
Yeah.
Could you, in theory, could you ever, like be out of maintenance and be like, it's done? There isn't any risks? You're pretty much over with this thing?
Well, it depends on the person, if they wish to see it like
they
that.
They change their life, though. I mean, if that is... Yeah. Is the way they have their life. That's the way their life is.
But I think if they follow their plan, and just the philosophy of the plan, which is long term care, I don't think a person could ever get into.
Yeah, so
thinking,
at some point
you know, it's always done. It's just.
But at some point it becomes so integrated in your life that it's not even something you have.
Or it becomes easy to do. Anymore. It definitely becomes easy to do. Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, I went through puberty, but I don't think I'm going to relapse.
I don't think that's ever going
to
happen.
Hope not. But, well, you know what? It depends on the person, really, you know, how comfortable they feel with their situation. There's some people that just prefer to stay on the mind track that this is an ongoing process and they just want continued reinforcement. And there are those people that feel comfortable enough to where they could say, you know what, I'm done, I'm through with this. And you know, I don't think either or is a bad thing. It's just, it depends on how it works in that person's life. Yeah.
So it's just people out there who have family members or other people or themselves or somebody that may need some help from substance abuse problem. Who are they going to call?
Behavioral health.
You got a number? That's part of your master's exam. Ha. Huh.
They can call 337-7874.
7874. 337-7874. Between the three of us alcohol and drug employees, one of us actually had almost had the point.
I have my number. It's 337-7877. And I'll direct you to our intake unit.
And if you say you heard it on KUBO, do you get like a free visit or something?
Okay.
A sticker.
All right. Thanks for listening today.
Thank you.
Join us again next week. We'll have a great show for you.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.